itself too, maybe.
Galadriel, he murmured, nodding his head mournfully. He looked up and gave one last pull to the rope, as if in farewell. To the complete surprise of both the hobbits, it came loose. Sam fell over, and the long grey coil slithered silently down on top of him. Frodo laughed. "Who tied the rope?" he said. "A good thing it held as long as it did. To think that I trusted all my weight to your knot." Sam didn't laugh. "I may not be much good at climbing, Mr. Frodo," he said in injured tones, "but I do know something about rope and about knots. It's in the family, as you might say. Why, my granddad, and my Uncle Andy after him that was the gaffer's eldest brother, he had a rope walk over by Tyfield many a year, and I put as fast a hitch over the stump as any one could have done in the shire or out of it." "Then the rope must have broken." "Frayed on the rock edge, I expect," said Frodo. "I bet it didn't," said Sam, in an even more injured voice. He stooped and examined the ends. "Nor it hasn't neither, not a strand." "Then I'm afraid it must have been the knot," said Frodo. Sam shook his head and didn't answer. He was passing the rope through his fingers thoughtfully. "Have it your own way, Mr. Frodo," he said at last. "But I think the rope came off itself when I called." He coiled it up and stowed it lovingly in his pack. "It certainly came," said Frodo, "and that's the chief thing. But now we've got to think of our next move. Night will be on us soon. How beautiful the stars are, and the moon." "They do cheer the heart, don't they?" said Sam, looking up. "Elvish they are, somehow. And the moon's growing. We haven't seen him for a night or two in this cloudy weather. He's beginning to give quite a light." "Yes," said Frodo. "But he won't be full for some days. I don't think we'll try the marshes by the light of half a moon." Under the first shadows of night they started out on the next stage of their journey. After a while Sam turned and looked back at the way they'd come. The mouth of the gully was a black notch in the dim cliff. "I'm glad we've got the rope," he said. "We've set a little puzzle for that footpad, anyhow. He can try his nasty, flappy feet on those ledges." They picked their steps away from the skirts of the cliff, among a wilderness of boulders and rough stones, wet and slippery with the heavy rain. The ground still fell away sharply. They'd not gone very far when they came upon a great fissure that yawned suddenly black before their feet. It was not wide, but it was too wide to jump across in the dim light. They thought they could hear water gurgling in its depths. It curved away on their left northward, back towards the hills, and so barred their road in that direction, at any rate while darkness lasted. "We'd better try a way back southwards along the line of the cliff, I think," said Sam. "We might find some nook there, or even a cave or something." "I suppose so," said Frodo. "I'm tired, and I don't think I can scramble among stones much longer tonight, though I grudge the delay. I wish there was a clear path in front of us. Then I'd go on till my legs gave way." They didn't find the going any easier at the broken feet of the Emyn Muil. Nor did Sam find any nook or hollow to shelter in. Only bare stony slopes frowned over by the cliff, which now rose again, higher and more sheer as they went back. In the end, worn out, they just cast themselves on the ground under the lee of a boulder lying not far from the foot of the precipice. There for some time they sat huddled mournfully together in the cold, stony night, while sleep crept upon them in spite of all they could do to hold it off. The moon now rode high and clear. Its thin white light lit up the faces of the rocks and drenched the cold, frowning walls of the cliff, turning all the wide, looming darkness into a chill, pale grey scored with black shadows. "Well," said Frodo, standing up and drawing his cloak more closely round him, "you sleep for a bit, Sam, and take my blanket. I'll walk up and down on sentry for a while." Suddenly he stiffened, and stooping, he gripped Sam by the arm. "What's that?" he whispered. "Look over there on the cliff." Sam looked and breathed in sharply through his teeth. "Shh," he said. "That's what it is. It's that golem. Snakes and adders. And to think that I thought that we'd puzzle him with our bit of a climb. Look at him, like a nasty crawling spider on a wall. Down the face of a precipice, sheer and almost smooth it seemed in the pale moonlight, a small black shape was moving, with its thin limbs splayed out. Maybe its soft, clinging hands and toes were finding crevices and holes that no hobbit could ever have seen or used, but it looked as if it were just creeping down on sticky pads, like some large prowling thing of insect kind. And it was coming down head first, as if it was smelling its way. Now and again it lifted its head slowly, turning it right back on its long, skinny neck, and the hobbits caught a glimpse of two small, pale, gleaming lights, its eyes that blinked at the moon for a moment and then were quickly lidded again. "Do you think he can see us?" said Sam. "I don't know," said Frodo quietly. "But I think not. It's hard even for friendly eyes to see those elven cloaks. I cannot see you in the shadow, even at a few paces, and I've heard that he doesn't like sun or moon." "Then why is he coming down just here?" asked Sam. "Quietly, Sam," said Frodo. "He can smell us, perhaps, and he can hear as keen as elves, I believe. I think he has heard something now, our voices probably. We did a lot of shouting away back there, and we were talking far too loudly until a minute ago." "Well, I'm sick of him," said Sam. "He's come once too often for me, and I'm going to have a word with him if I can. I don't suppose we could give him the slip now, anyway." Drawing his grey hood well over his face, Sam crept stealthily towards the cliff. "Careful!" whispered Frodo, coming behind. "Don't alarm him. He's much more dangerous than he looks." The black crawling shape was now three-quarters of the way down, and perhaps 50 feet or less above the cliff's foot. Crouching stone still in the shadow of a large boulder, the hobbits watched him. He seemed to have come to a difficult passage or to be troubled about something. They could hear him snuffling, and now and again there was a harsh hiss of breath that sounded like a curse. He lifted his head, and they thought they heard him spit. Then he moved on again. Now they could hear his voice creaking and whistling.
"Ah, shh, cautious, my precious. More haste, less speed. We mustn't risk our neck, must we, precious? And oh, precious."
He lifted his head again, blinked at the moon, and quickly shut his eyes.
"We hate it," he hissed. "Nasty, shivery light it is. It spies on us, precious. It hurts our eyes."
He was getting lower now, and the hisses became sharper and clearer.
"Where is it? Where is it, my precious? My precious? It's ours, it is, and we wants it. The thieves, the thieves, the filthy little thieves. Where are they with my precious? Curse them. We hates them."
"It doesn't sound as if he knew we were here, does it?" whispered Sam. "And what's his precious? Does he mean the shh?" breathed Frodo. "He's getting near now, near enough to hear a whisper." Indeed, Gollum had suddenly paused again, and his large head on its scrawny neck was lolling from side to side as if he was listening. His pale eyes were half unlidded. Sam restrained himself, though his fingers were twitching. His eyes, filled with anger and disgust, were fixed on the wretched creature, as he now began to move again, still whispering and hissing to himself. At last he was no more than a dozen feet from the ground, right above their heads. From that point there was a sheer drop, for the cliff was slightly undercut, and even Gollum could not find a hold of any kind. He seemed to be trying to twist round, so as to go legs first, when suddenly, with a shrill, whistling shriek, he fell. As he did so, he curled his legs and arms up round him, like a spider whose descending thread is snapped. Sam was out of his hiding in a flash, and crossed the space between him and the cliff foot in a couple of leaps. Before Gollum could get up, He was on top of him. But he found Gollum more than he bargained for, even taken like that, suddenly, off his guard after a fall. Before Sam could get a hold, long legs and arms were wound round him, pinning his arms, and a clinging grip, soft but horribly strong, was squeezing him like slowly tightening cords. Clammy fingers were feeling for his throat. Then sharp teeth bit into his shoulder. All he could do was to butt his hard head sideways into the creature's face. Gollum hissed and spat, but he didn't let go. Things would have gone ill with Sam if he'd been alone, but Frodo sprang up and drew Sting from its sheath. With his left hand he drew back Gollum's head by his thin, lank hair, stretching his long neck and forcing his pale, venomous eyes to stare up at the sky. "Let go, Gollum," he said. "This is Sting. You've seen it before, once upon a time. Let go, or you'll feel it this time. I'll cut your throat." Gollum collapsed and went as loose as wet string. Sam got up, fingering his shoulder. His eyes smouldered with anger, but he could not avenge himself. His miserable enemy lay grovelling on the stones, whimpering,
"Don't hurt us! Don't let them hurt us, precious. They won't hurt us, will they? Nice little hobbitses. We didn't mean them no harm, but they jumps on us like cats on poor mices, they did, precious. And we're so lonely. We'll be nice to them, very nice, if they'll be nice to us, won't we? Yes, yes."
"Well, what's to be done with it?" said Sam. "Tie it up, so's it can't come sneaking after us no more, I say."
"But that would kill us, kill us,"
whimpered Gollum.
"Cruel little hobbitses, tie us up in the cold, hard lands and leave us, Gollum, Gollum!"
Sobs welled up in his gobbling throat. "No," said Frodo. "If we kill him, we must kill him outright. But we can't do that. Not as things are. Poor wretch. He's done us no harm." "Oh, hasn't he?" said Sam, rubbing his shoulder. "Anyway, he meant to. And he means to, I'll warrant. Throttle us in our sleep. That's his plan."
"I dare say," said Frodo. "But what he means to do is another matter." He paused for a while in thought. Gollum lay still, but stopped whimpering. Sam stood glowering over him. It seemed to Frodo then that he heard, quite plainly but far off, voices out of the past. What a pity Bilbo did not stab the vile creature when he had a chance!
Pity? It was pity that stayed his hand. Pity and mercy, not to strike without need.
I don't feel any pity for Gollum. He deserves death.
Deserves death? I dare say he does. Many that live deserve death. And some die that deserve life. Can you give that to them? Then be not too eager to deal out death in the name of justice, fearing for your own safety. Even the wise cannot see all ends.
Very well, he answered aloud, lowering the sword. But still I'm afraid. And yet, as you see, I won't touch the creature, for now that I see him, I do pity him. Sam stared at his master, who seemed to be speaking to someone who was not there. Gollum lifted his head.
"Yes, wretched we are, precious," he whined. "Misery, misery. Hobbits won't kill us. Nice hobbits."
"No, we won't," said Frodo. "But we won't let you go either. You're full of wickedness and mischief, Gollum. You'll have to come with us, that's all, while we keep an eye on you. But you must help us, if you can. One good turn deserves another."
"Yes, yes, indeed," said Gollum, sitting up. "Nice hobbits. We'll come with them, find them safe paths in the dark. Yes, we will. And where are they going in these cold, hard lands, we wonders? Yes, we wonders."
He looked up at them, and a faint light of cunning and eagerness flickered for a second in his pale, blinking eyes. Sam scowled at him and sucked his teeth. But he seemed to sense that there was something odd about his master's mood, and that the matter was beyond argument. All the same, he was amazed at Frodo's reply. Frodo looked straight into Gollum's eyes, which flinched and twisted away. "You know that, or you guess well enough, Smeagol," he said, quietly and sternly. "We are going to Mordor, of course, and you know the way there, I believe."
"Hush!"
said Gollum, covering his ears with his hands, as if such frankness, and the open speaking of the names, hurt him.
"We guessed, yes, we guessed," he whispered, "and we didn't want them to go, did we? No, precious, not the nice hobbits. Ashes, ashes, and dust, and thirst there is, and pits, 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 and orcs, thousands of orcses. Nice hobbits mustn't go to those places."
"So you have been there," Frodo insisted. "And you're being drawn back there, aren't you?"
"Yes, yes, no!" shrieked Gollum. "Once by accident it was, wasn't it, precious? Yes, by accident. But we won't go back. No, no!"
Then suddenly his voice and language changed, and he sobbed in his throat, and spoke but not to them.
"Leave me alone! Gollum, you hurt me. How my poor hands, Gollum. I don't want to come back. I can't find it. I'm tired. We can't find it. Gollum, Gollum, no, nowhere. They're always awake. Dwarves, men, and elves, terrible elves with bright eyes. I can't find it. Ugh!"
He got up and clenched his long hand into a bony, fleshless knot, shaking it towards the east.
"We won't," he cried. "Not for you."
Then he collapsed again.
"Gollum, Gollum," he whimpered with his face to the ground, "don't look at us. Go away. Go to sleep."
"He won't go away or go to sleep at your command, Smeagol," said Frodo. "But if you really wish to be free of him again, then you must help me. And that, I fear, means finding us a path towards him. But you needn't go all the way, not beyond the gates of his land." Gollum sat up again and looked at him under his eyelids.
"He's over there," he cackled. "Always there. Orcs will take you all the way. Easy to find orcs east of the river. Don't ask Smeagol. Poor, poor Smeagol. He went away long ago. They took his precious, and he's lost now."
"Perhaps we'll find him again if you come with us," said Frodo.
"No, no, never. He's lost his precious," said Gollum.
"Get up," said Frodo. Gollum stood up and backed away against the cliff. "Now," said Frodo, "can you find a path easier by day or by night? We're tired, but if you choose the night, we'll start tonight."
"The big lights hurt our eyes, they do," Gollum whined. "Not under the white face, not yet. It will go behind the hills soon, yes. Rest a bit first, nice hobbits."
"Then sit down," said Frodo, "and don't move." The hobbits seated themselves beside him, one on either side, with their backs to the stony wall, resting their legs. There was no need for any arrangement by word. They knew that they mustn't sleep for a moment. Slowly the moon went by. Shadows fell down from the hills, and all grew dark before them. The stars grew thick and bright in the sky above. No one stirred. Gollum sat with his legs drawn up, knees under chin, flat hands and feet splayed on the ground. His eyes closed, but he seemed tense, as if thinking or listening. Frodo looked across at Sam. Their eyes met and they understood. They relaxed, leaning their heads back and shutting their eyes or seeming to. Soon the sound of their soft breathing could be heard. Gollum's hands twitched a little. Hardly perceptibly his head moved to the left and the right, and first one eye and then the other opened a slit. The hobbits made no sign. Suddenly, with startling agility and speed, straight off the ground with a jump like a grasshopper or a frog, Gollum bounded forward into the darkness. But that was just what Frodo and Sam had expected. Sam was on him before he had gone 2 paces after his spring. Frodo, coming behind, grabbed his legs and threw him. "Your rope might be useful again, Sam," he said. Sam got out the rope. "And where were you off to in the cold, hard lands, Mr. Gollum?" he growled. "We wonders, aye, we wonders. To find some of your orc friends, I warrant, you nasty, treacherous creature. It's round your neck this rope ought to go, and a tight noose, too." Gollum lay quiet and tried no further tricks. He didn't answer Sam, but gave him a swift, venomous look. "All we need is something to keep a hold on him," said Frodo. "We want him to walk, so it's no good tying his legs or his arms. He seems to use them nearly as much. Tie one end to his ankle and keep a grip on the other end." He stood over Gollum while Sam tied the knot. The result surprised them both. Gollum began to scream, a thin, tearing sound, very horrible to hear. He writhed, and tried to get his mouth to his ankle and bite the rope. He kept on screaming. At last Frodo was convinced that he really was in pain. But it couldn't be from the knot. He examined it, and found that it wasn't too tight, indeed hardly tight enough. Sam was gentler than his words. "What's the matter with you?" he said. "If you'll try to run away, you must be tied. But we don't wish to hurt you."
"It hurts us, it hurts us," hissed Gollum. "It freezes, it bites. Elves twisted it, curse them. Nasty, cruel hobbits. That's why we tries to escape. Of course it is, precious. We guessed they were cruel hobbits. They visit elves, fierce elves with bright eyes. Take it off us, it hurts us."
"No, I won't take it off you," said Frodo. "Not unless..." He paused a moment in thought. "Not unless there is any promise you can make that I can trust."
"We will swear to do what he wants, yes, yes," said Gollum, still twisting and grabbing at his ankle. "It hurts us."
"Swear," said Frodo.
"Smeagol,"
said Gollum suddenly and clearly, opening his eyes wide and staring at Frodo with a strange light.
"Smeagol will swear on the precious."
Frodo drew himself up, and again Sam was startled by his words and his stern voice. "On the precious? How dare you?" he said. "Think. One ring to rule them all, and in the darkness bind them. Would you commit your promise to that, Smeagol? It will hold you, but it's more treacherous than you are. It may twist your words. Beware." Gollum cowered.
"On the precious, on the precious," he repeated.
"And what would you swear?" asked Frodo.
"To be very, very good," said Gollum.
Then, crawling to Frodo's feet, he grovelled before him, whispering hoarsely. A shudder ran over him, as if the words shook his very bones with fear.
"Smeagol will swear never, never to let him have it. Never. Smeagol will save it. But he must swear on the precious."
"No, not on it," said Frodo, looking down at him with stern pity. "All you wish is to see it and touch it, if you can, though you know it would drive you mad. Not on it. Swear by it, if you will, for you know where it is. Yes, you know, Smeagol. It's before you." For a moment it appeared to Sam that his master had grown and Gollum had shrunk. A tall, stern shadow, a mighty lord who hid his brightness in grey cloud, and at his feet a little whining dog. Yet the two were in some way akin and not alien. They could reach one another's minds. Gollum raised himself and began pawing at Frodo, fawning at his knees. "Down, down," said Frodo. "Now speak your promise."
"We promises. Yes, I promise," said Gollum. "I will serve the master of the precious. Good master, good Smeagol, Gollum, Gollum."
Suddenly he began to weep and bite at his ankle again. "Take the rope off, Sam," said Frodo. Reluctantly Sam obeyed. At once Gollum got up and began prancing about like a whipped cur whose master has patted it. From that moment a change, which lasted for some time, came over him. He spoke with less hissing and whining, and he spoke to his companions direct, not to his precious self. He would cringe and flinch if they stepped near him or made any sudden movement, and he avoided the touch of their elven cloaks. But he was friendly, and indeed pitifully anxious to please. He would cackle with laughter and caper if any jest was made, or even if Frodo spoke kindly to him, and weep if Frodo rebuked him. Sam said little to him of any sort. He suspected him more deeply than ever, and, if possible, liked the new Gollum, the Smeagol, less than the old. "Well, Gollum, or whatever it is we're to call you," he said, "now for it. The moon's gone, and the night's going. We'd better start."
"Yes, yes," agreed Gollum, skipping about. "Off we go. There's only one way across between the north end and the south end. I found it, I did. Orcs don't use it. Orcs don't know it. Orcs don't cross the marshes. They go round for miles and miles. Very lucky you came this way. Very lucky you found Smeagol. Yes, follow Smeagol."
He took a few steps away and looked back inquiringly, like a dog inviting them for a walk. "Wait a bit, Gollum," cried Sam. "Not too far ahead now. I'm going to be at your tail, and I've got the rope handy."
"No, no," said Gollum. "Smeagol promised."
In the deep of night, under hard, clear stars, they set off. Gollum led them back northward for a while, along the way that they had come. Then he slanted to the right, away from the steep edge of the Emyn Muil, down the broken stony slopes towards the vast fens below. They faded swiftly and softly into the darkness. Over all the leagues of waste before the gates of Mordor, there was a black silence. Chapter 2. The Passage of the Marshes. Gollum moved quickly, with his head and neck thrust forward, often using his hands as well as his feet. Frodo and Sam were hard put to it to keep up with him, but he seemed no longer to have any thought of escaping, and if they fell behind, he would turn and wait for them. After a time he brought them to the brink of the narrow gully that they had struck before, but they were now further down the hills.
"Here it is," he cried. "There is a way down in sight, yes. Now we follows it out. Out away over there."
He pointed south and east towards the marshes. The reek of them came to their nostrils, heavy and foul, even in the cool night air. Gollum cast up and down along the brink, and at length he called to them.
"Here! We can get down here. Smeagol went this way once. I went this way, hiding from orcs."
He led the way, and following him the hobbits climbed down into the gloom. It was not difficult, for the rift was at this point only some 15 feet deep and about a dozen across. There was running water at the bottom. It was, in fact, the bed of one of the many small rivers that trickled down from the hills to feed the stagnant pools and mires beyond. Gollum turned to the right, southward more or less, and splashed along with his feet in the shallow, stony stream. He seemed greatly delighted to feel the water, and chuckled to himself, sometimes even croaking in a sort of song.
"The cold, hard lands, they bite our hands, they gnaws our feet. The rocks and stones are like old bones, all bare of meat. But stream and pool is wet and cool, so nice for feet. And now we wish..." "Ha-ha! What does we wish?"
he said, looking sidelong at the hobbits. "We'll tell you," he croaked.
"He guessed it long ago. Baggins guessed it."
A glint came into his eyes, and Sam, catching the gleam in the darkness, thought it far from pleasant.
"Alive without breath, as cold as death, never thirsty, ever drinking, clad in mail, never clinking, drowns on dry land, thinks an island is a mountain, thinks a fountain is a puff of air. So sleek, so fair, what a joy to meet. We only wish to catch a fish so juicy sweet.
These words only made more pressing to Sam's mind a problem that had been troubling him from the moment when he understood that his master was going to adopt Gollum as a guide, the problem of food. It didn't occur to him that his master might also have thought of it, but he supposed Gollum had. Indeed, how had Gollum kept himself in all his lonely wandering? Not too well, thought Sam. He looks fair famished. Not too dainty to try what hobbit tastes like. If there ain't no fish, I'll wager, supposing as he could catch us napping. Well, he won't. Not Sam Gamgee, for one. They stumbled along in the dark, winding gully for a long time, or so it seemed to the tired feet of Frodo and Sam. The gully turned eastward, and as they went on it broadened and got gradually shallower. At last the sky above grew faint with the first grey of morning. Gollum had shown no signs of tiring, but now he looked up and halted.
"Day is near,"
he whispered, as if day was something that might overhear him and spring on him.
"Smeagol will stay here. I will stay here, and the yellow face won't see me."
"We should be glad to see the sun," said Frodo. "But we'll stay here. We're too tired to go on any further at present."
"You're not wise to be glad of the yellow face," said Gollum. "It shows you up. Nice, sensible hobbit, stay with Smeagol. Orcs and nasty things are about. They can see a long way. Stay and hide with me."
The three of them settled down to rest at the foot of the rocky wall of the gully. It was not much more than a tall man's height now, and at its base there were wide, flat shelves of dry stone. The water ran in a channel on the other side. Frodo and Sam sat on one of the flats, resting their backs. Gollum paddled and scrabbled in the stream. "We must take a little food," said Frodo. "Are you hungry, Smeagol?"
"We have very little to share, but we will spare you what we can."
At the word hungry, a greenish light was kindled in Gollum's pale eyes, and they seemed to protrude further than ever from his thin, sickly face. For a moment he relapsed into his old Gollum manner.
"We are famished. Yes, famished we are, precious," he said. "What is it they eat? Have they nice fishes?"
His tongue lolled out between his sharp yellow teeth, licking his colourless lips. "No, we've got no fish," said Frodo. "We have only got this." He held up a wafer of lembas. "And water, if the water here's fit to drink."
"Yes, yes, nice water," said Gollum. Drink it while we can. But what is it they've got, precious? Is it crunchable? Is it tasty?"
Frodo broke off a portion of a wafer and handed it to him on its leaf wrapping. Gollum sniffed at the leaf and his face changed. A spasm of disgust came over it, and a hint of his old malice.
"Smeagol smells it," he said. "Leaves out of the elf country. They stinks. He climbed in those trees and he couldn't wash the smell off his hands, my nice hands."
Dropping the leaf, he took a corner of the lembas and nibbled it. He spat, and a fit of coughing shook him.
"Ah, no," he spluttered. "You tried to choke poor Smeagol. Dust and ashes. He can't eat that. He must starve. But Smeagol doesn't mind. Nice hobbits. Smeagol has promised he will starve. He can't eat hobbits' food. He will starve. Poor thin Smeagol."
"I'm sorry," said Frodo, "but I can't help you, I'm afraid. I think this food would do you good, if you would try, but perhaps you can't even try, not yet, anyway." The hobbits munched their lembas in silence. Sam thought it had tasted far better, somehow, than it had for a good while. Gollum's behaviour had made him attend to its flavour again. But he didn't feel comfortable. Gollum watched every morsel from hand to mouth, like an expectant dog by a diner's chair. Only when they'd finished and were preparing to rest was he apparently convinced that they had no hidden dainties that he could share in. Then he went and sat by himself a few paces away and whimpered a little. "Look here," Sam whispered to Frodo, not too softly. He didn't really care whether Gollum heard him or not. "We've got to get some sleep, but not both together with that hungry villain nigh, promise or no promise. Smeagol or Gollum, he won't change his habits in a hurry, I'll warrant. You go to sleep, Mr. Frodo, and I'll call you when I can't keep my eyelids propped up. Turn and about, same as before, while he's loose." "Perhaps you're right, Sam," said Frodo, speaking openly. "There is a change in him, but just what kind of change and how deep, I'm not sure yet. Seriously, though, I don't think there's any need for fear at present. Still, watch if you wish. Give me about 2 hours, not more, and then call me." So tired was Frodo that his head fell forward on his breast, and he slept almost as soon as he'd spoken the words. Gollum seemed no longer to have any fears. He curled up and went quickly to sleep, quite unconcerned. Presently his breath was hissing softly through his clenched teeth, but he lay still as stone. After a while, fearing that he'd drop off himself if he sat listening to his two companions breathing, Sam got up and gently prodded Gollum. His hands uncurled and twitched, but he made no other movement. Sam bent down and said, "Fish," close to his ear, but there was no response, not even a catch in Gollum's breathing. Sam scratched his head. "Must really be asleep," he muttered. "And if I was like Gollum, he wouldn't wake up never again." He restrained the thoughts of his sword and the rope that sprang to his mind, and went and sat down by his master. When he woke up, the sky above was dim, not lighter, but darker than when they had breakfasted. Sam leapt to his feet. Not least from his own feeling of vigour and hunger, he suddenly understood that he'd slept the daylight away, 9 hours at least. Frodo was still fast asleep, lying now stretched on his side. Gollum wasn't to be seen. Various reproachful names for himself came to Sam's mind, drawn from the gaffer's large paternal word hoard. Then it also occurred to him that his master had been right. There had for the present been nothing to guard against. They were at any rate both alive and unthrottled. "Poor wretch," he said half remorselessly. "Now I wonder where he's got to."
"Not far, not far," said a voice above him.
He looked up and saw the shape of Gollum's large head and ears against the evening sky.
"Here, what are you doing?" cried Sam, his suspicions coming back as soon as he saw the shape.
"Smeagol is hungry," said Gollum. "Be back soon."
"Come back now," shouted Sam. "Hi, come back." But Gollum had vanished.
Frodo woke at the sound of Sam's shout and sat up, rubbing his eyes. "Hello," he said. "Anything wrong? What's the time?"
"I don't know," said Sam. "After sundown, I reckon, and he's gone off. Says he's hungry."
"Don't worry," said Frodo. "There's no help for it. But he'll come back, you'll see. The promise will hold yet a while, and he won't leave his precious anyway." Frodo made light of it when he learned that they had slept soundly for hours with Gollum, and a very hungry Gollum, too, loose beside them. "Don't think of any of your gaffer's hard names," he said. "You were worn out, and it's turned out well. We are now both rested, and we've a hard road ahead, the worst road of all."
"About the food," said Sam. "How long's it going to take us to do this job? And when it's done, what are we going to do then?
This whey bread keeps you on your legs in a wonderful way, though it doesn't satisfy the innards proper, as you might say. Not to my feeling, anyhow, meaning no disrespect to them as made it. But you have to eat some of it every day, and it doesn't grow. I reckon we've got enough to last, say, 3 weeks or so, and that with a tight belt and a light tooth, mind you. We've been a bit free with it so far.
I don't know how long we shall take to finish, said Frodo. We were miserably delayed in the hills. But Samwise Gamgee, my dear hobbit, indeed, Sam, my dearest hobbit, friend of friends, I don't think we need give thought to what comes after that. To do the job, as you put it, what hope is there that we ever shall? And if we do, who knows what will come of that? If the one goes into the fire and we're at hand, I ask you, Sam, are we ever likely to need bread again? I think not. If we can nurse our limbs to bring us to Mount Doom, that's all we can do. More than I can, I begin to feel. Sam nodded silently. He took his master's hand and bent over it. He didn't kiss it, though his tears fell on it. Then he turned away, drew his sleeve over his nose, and got up and stamped about, trying to whistle, and saying between the efforts, "Where's that dratted creature?" It was actually not long before Gollum returned, but he came so quietly that they didn't hear him till he stood before them. His fingers and face were soiled with black mud. He was still chewing and slavering. What he was chewing, they didn't ask or like to think. "Worms or beetles or something slimy out of holes," thought Sam. "Brr, the nasty creature, the poor wretch." Gollum said nothing to them until he'd drunk deeply and washed himself in the stream. Then he came up to them, licking his lips.
"Better now," he said. "Are we rested? Ready to go on? Nice hobbits, they sleep beautifully. Trust Smeagol now? Very, very good."
The next stage of their journey was much the same as the last. As they went on, the gully became even shallower and the slope of its floor more gradual. Its bottom was less stony and more earthy, and slowly its sides dwindled to mere banks. It began to wind and wander. That night drew to its end, but clouds were now over moon and star, and they knew of the coming of day only by the slow spreading of the thin grey light. In a chill hour they came to the end of the watercourse. The banks became moss-grown mounds. Over the last shelf of rotting stone, the stream gurgled and fell down into a brown bog and was lost. Dry reeds hissed and rattled, though they could feel no wind. On either side and in front, wide fens and mires now lay, stretching away southward and eastward into the dim half-light. Mists curled and smoked from dark and noisome pools. The reek of them hung stifling in the still air. Far away, now almost due south, the mountain walls of Mordor loomed like a black bar of rugged clouds floating above a dangerous, fog-bound sea. The hobbits were now wholly in the hands of Gollum. They didn't know, and couldn't guess in that misty light, that they were in fact only just within the northern borders of the marshes, the main expanse of which lay south of them. They could, if they'd known the lands, with some delay have retraced their steps a little, and then, turning east, have come round over hard roads to the bare plain of Dagorlad, the field of the ancient battle before the gates of Mordor. Not that there was great hope in such a course. On that stony plain there was no cover, and across it ran the highways of the orcs and the soldiers of the enemy. Not even the cloaks of Lórien would have concealed them there. "How do we shape our course now, Smeagol?" asked Frodo. "Must we cross these evil-smelling fens?"
"No need, no need at all," said Gollum. "Not if hobbits want to reach the Dark Mountains and go to see him very quick. Back a little and round a little," his skinny arm waved north and east, "and you can come on hard, cold roads to the very gates of his country. Lots of his people will be there looking out for guests. Very pleased to take them straight to him, oh yes. His eye watches that way all the time. It caught Smeagol there long ago," Gollum shuddered. but Smeagol has used his eyes since then. Yes, yes, I've used eyes and feet and nose since then. I know other ways. More difficult, not so quick, but better. If we don't want him to see, follow Smeagol. He can take you through the marshes, through the mists, nice thick mists. Follow Smeagol very carefully, and you may go a long way, quite a long way, before he catches you. Yes, perhaps.
It was already day, a windless and sullen morning, and the marsh reeks lay in heavy banks. No sun pierced the low, clouded sky, and Gollum seemed anxious to continue the journey at once. So after a brief rest, they set out again and were soon lost in a shadowy, silent world, cut off from all view of the lands about, either the hills that they had left or the mountains that they sought. They went slowly in single file, Gollum, Sam, Frodo. Frodo seemed the most weary of the three, and slow though they went, he often lagged. The hobbits soon found that what had looked like one vast fen was really an endless network of pools and soft mires and winding, half-strangled watercourses. Among these a cunning eye and foot could thread a wandering path. Gollum certainly had that cunning and needed all of it. His head on its long neck was ever turning this way and that, while he sniffed and muttered all the time to himself. Sometimes he would hold up his hand and halt them, while he went forward a little, crouching, testing the ground with fingers or toes, or merely listening with one ear pressed to the earth. It was dreary and wearisome. Cold, clammy winter still held sway in this forsaken country. The only green was the scum of livid weed on the dark, greasy surfaces of the sullen waters. Dead grasses and rotting weeds loomed up in the mists like ragged shadows of long-forgotten summers. As the day wore on, the light increased a little, and the mists lifted, growing thinner and more transparent. Far above the rot and vapours of the world the sun was riding high and golden now in a serene country with floors of dazzling foam. But only a passing ghost of her could they see below, bleared, pale, giving no colour and no warmth. But even at this faint reminder of her presence, Gollum scowled and flinched. He halted their journey, and they rested, squatting like little hunted animals, in the borders of a great brown reed thicket. There was a deep silence, only scraped on its surface by the faint quiver of empty seed plumes and broken grass blades trembling in small air movements that they could not feel.
"Not a bird," said Sam mournfully. "No, no birds," said Gollum. "Nice birds." He licked his lips. "No birds here. There are snakes, says. Worms, says. Things in the pools. Lots of things. Lots of nasty things. No birds," he ended sadly.
Sam looked at him with distaste. So passed the third day of their journey with Gollum. Before the shadows of evening were long in happier lands, they went on again, always on and on with only brief halts. These they made not so much for rest as to help Gollum, for now even he had to go forward with great care, and he was sometimes at a loss for a while. They'd come to the very midst of the dead marshes, and it was dark. They walked slowly, stooping, keeping close in line, following attentively every move that Gollum made. The fens grew more wet, opening into wide, stagnant meres, amongst which it grew more and more difficult to find the firmer places where feet could tread without sinking into gurgling mud. The travellers were light, or maybe none of them would ever have found a way through. Presently it grew altogether dark. The air itself seemed black and heavy to breathe. When lights appeared, Sam rubbed his eyes. He thought his head was going queer. He first saw one with the corner of his left eye, a wisp of pale sheen that faded away, but others appeared soon after, some like dimly shining smoke, some like misty flames flickering slowly above unseen candles. Here and there they twisted like ghostly sheets unfurled by hidden hands. But neither of his companions spoke a word. At last Sam could bear it no longer.
"What's all this, Gollum?" he said in a whisper. "These lights. They're all round us now. Are we trapped? Who are they?"
Gollum looked up. A dark water was before him, and he was crawling on the ground, this way and that, doubtful of the way.
"Yes, they are all round us," he whispered. "The tricksy lights. Candles of corpses. Yes, yes. Don't you heed them. Don't look. Don't follow them. Where's the master?"
Sam looked back and found that Frodo had lagged again. He couldn't see him. He went some paces back into the darkness, not daring to move far or to call in more than a hoarse whisper. Suddenly he stumbled against Frodo, who was standing lost in thought, looking at the pale lights. His hands hung stiff at his sides. Water and slime were dripping from them.
"Come, Mr. Frodo," said Sam. "Don't look at them. Gollum says we mustn't. Let's keep up with him and get out of this cursed place as quick as we can, if we can."
"All right," said Frodo, as if returning out of a dream. "I'm coming. Go on." Chapter 3 The Black Gate is Closed. Before the next day dawned, their journey to Mordor was over. The marshes and the desert were behind them. Before them, darkling against a pallid sky, the great mountains reared their threatening heads. Upon the west of Mordor marched the gloomy range of Ethelduath, the Mountains of Shadow, and upon the north the broken peaks and barren ridges of Ered Lithwy, grey as ash. But as these ranges approached one another, being indeed but parts of one great wall about the mournful plains of Lithlad and of Gorgoroth, and the bitter inland sea of Nornan amidmost, they swung out long arms northward, and between these arms there was a deep defile. This was Kirith Gorgor, the haunted pass, the entrance to the land of the enemy. High cliffs lowered upon either side, and thrust forward from its mouth were two sheer hills, black-boned and bare. Upon them stood the teeth of Mordor, two towers strong and tall. In days long past, they were built by the men of Gondor in their pride and power, after the overthrow of Sauron and his flight, lest he should seek to return to his old realm. But the strength of Gondor failed, and men slept, and for long years the towers stood empty. Then Sauron returned. Now the watchtowers, which had fallen into decay, were repaired, and filled with arms, and garrisoned with ceaseless vigilance. Stony-faced they were, with dark window-holes staring north and east and west, and each window was full of sleepless eyes. Across the mouth of the pass, from cliff to cliff, the Dark Lord had built a rampart of stone. In it there was a single gate of iron, and upon its battlement sentinels paced unceasingly. Between the hills on either side the rock was bored into 100 caves and maggot-holes. There a host of orcs lurked, ready at a signal to issue forth like black ants going to war. None could pass the teeth of Mordor and not feel their bite, unless they were summoned by Sauron, or knew the secret passwords that would open the Morannon, the black gate of his land. The two hobbits gazed at the towers and the wall in despair. Even from a distance they could see in the dim light the movement of the black guards upon the wall and the patrols before the gate. They lay now peering over the edge of a rocky hollow beneath the outstretched shadow of the northmost buttress of Ethelduath. Winging the heavy air in a straight flight, a crow, maybe, would have flown but a furlong from their hiding place to the black summit of the nearer tower. A faint smoke curled above it, as if fire smouldered in the hill beneath. Day came, and the fallow sun blinked over the lifeless ridges of Ered Lithwy. Then suddenly the cry of brazen-throated trumpets was heard. From the watchtowers they bled, and far away from hidden holds and outposts in the hills came answering calls, and further still, remote but deep and ominous, there echoed in the hollow land beyond the mighty horns and drums of Barad-dûr. Another dreadful day of fear and toil had come to Mordor, and the night guards were summoned to their dungeons and deep halls, and the day guards, evil-eyed and fell, were marching to their posts. Steel gleamed dimly on the battlement.
"Well, here we are," said Sam. "Here's the gate, and it looks to me as if that's about as far as we're ever going to get. My word, but the gaffer would have a thing or two to say if he saw me now. Often said I'd come to a bad end if I didn't watch my step, he did. But now I don't suppose I'll ever see the old fellow again.
He'll miss his chance of... I told he so, Sam. More's the pity. He could go on telling me as long as he'd got breath, if only I could see his old face again. But I'd have to get a wash first, or he wouldn't know me. I suppose it's no good asking, what way do we go now? We can't go no further, unless we want to ask the orcs for a lift.
No, no, said Gollum. No use. We can't go further. Smeagol said so. He said, we'll go to the gate, and then we'll see. And we do see. Oh, yes, my precious, we do see. Smeagol knew hobbits could not go this way. Oh, yes, Smeagol knew.
Then what the plague did you bring us here for? Said Sam, not feeling in the mood to be just or reasonable.
Master said so. Master says, bring us to the gate. So good Smeagol does so. Master said so. Wise master.
I did, said Frodo. His face was grim and set, but resolute. He was filthy, haggard, and pinched with weariness, but he cowered no longer, and his eyes were clear.
I said so, because I purpose to enter Mordor, and I know no other way. Therefore I shall go this way. I don't ask anyone to go with me.
No, no, master, wailed Gollum, pawing at him, and seeming in great distress. No use that way, no use. Don't take the precious to him. He'll eat us all if he gets it, eat all the world. Keep it, nice master, and be kind to Smeagol. Don't let him have it, or go away. Go to nice places and give it back to little Smeagol. Yes, yes, master, give it back, eh? Smeagol will keep it safe. He will do lots of good, especially to nice hobbits. Hobbits go home. Don't go to the gate.
I am commanded to go to the land of Mordor, and therefore I shall go, said Frodo. If there's only one way, then I must take it. What comes after must come. Sam said nothing. The look on Frodo's face was enough for him. He knew that words of his were useless. And after all, he never had any real hope in the affair from the beginning. But being a cheerful hobbit, he had not needed hope, as long as despair could be postponed. Now they were come to the bitter end. But he had stuck to his master all the way. That was what he'd chiefly come for, and he'd still stick to him. His master wouldn't go to Mordor alone. Sam would go with him, and at any rate they would get rid of Gollum. Gollum, however, didn't intend to be got rid of yet. He knelt at Frodo's feet, wringing his hands and squeaking,
"Not this way, master," he pleaded. "There's another way. Oh, yes, indeed, there is another way, dark. More difficult to find, more secret. But Smeagol knows it. Let Smeagol show you."
"Another way?" said Frodo doubtfully, looking down at Gollum with searching eyes.
"Yes, yes, indeed. There was another way. Smeagol found it. Let's go and see if it's still there."
"You haven't spoken of this before?"
"No, master didn't ask. Master didn't say what he meant to do. He doesn't tell poor Smeagol. He says, 'Smeagol, take me to the gate, and then goodbye. Smeagol can run away and be good. But now he says, I purpose to enter Mordor this way. So Smeagol is very afraid. He doesn't want to lose nice master. And he promised, master made him promise, to save the precious. But master is going to take it to him, straight to the Black Hand, if master will go this way. So Smeagol must save them both, and he thinks of another way that they